I knew someone who had cervical cancer, and this was a really big thing in their life and in my life as well. And sometimes those stories are around how the product has made things easier. I love getting those. I hope that we'll continue to get them, and they are definitely drivers for us, not just me, but for my entire team.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. So I'm excited about today's guest. Jessica Ching is the founder of Eve Medical, and Eve Medical makes devices so that women can do cervical screening in the privacy of their own home. There's a few reasons that I have been really working hard to get Jessica onto the podcast. First, she's done something incredible for women's health, something totally revolutionary, I would argue, in terms of acknowledging the fact that not all women want to go into their doctor's office, spread their legs, and have a cervical screen done by someone else. Jessica acknowledged that and created something amazing to put out into the marketplace. This makes her a true pioneer and entrepreneur of the most real sort. And the reason why I was so excited to have her here is because Jessica never intended to live this journey at all. In fact, they came up with this product idea while they were still in school, and then she just couldn't let it go. She's an amazing example of someone who became an entrepreneur as a result of a need and passion to put something out into the marketplace that would serve people in a really big way. Jessica talks openly about her journey as an entrepreneur, the huge roadblocks that they had to overcome in order to get their product to market, and why if she had quit early on, it never would have been able to change women's lives the way it is. Throughout this whole process of birthing a young business, Jessica also birthed an actual human being, which is one of those badass things we can do as women. And the confluence of these two journeys are one of the things that make her story so real and so accessible and so inspiring to all of us. It is truly a pleasure for me to introduce you to Toronto-based entrepreneur and founder of Eve Medical, Jessica Ching. Jessica Ching, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Hi, thanks. It's so great to be on it.
I'm really excited to have you because I kind of feel like we have this bona fide, real life female entrepreneur in the house, and we're going to be able to talk about all the things that are important to the Entrepology community all under one roof. We can talk about your journey as an entrepreneur. We can talk about your journey as a new mom. We can talk about what it's actually like to be a woman in the landscape and culture of startup. And before we do, let's back up a little bit and give you the opportunity to share with everybody your journey. And, I know about your journey, and I know you started at OCAD here in Toronto. But I would actually love to go one step before that and have you share, like, when you applied to OCAD University, which is an arts university for really creative, talented people, what was your vision for your career? And then how did that pivot and evolve into what you've built now, which is Eve Medical? How did all this come about?
Sure. So going way back, I actually really had no concept of design as a potential career when I first started out. I actually did my first degree at McGill in political science and international development. And initially, I thought I was going to, go work for the UN or something like that. But halfway through the degree, I sort of realized that it wasn't creative enough for me, and I always had that desire to do something a little bit more creative. And so I went to OCAD to check out their programs and went to their grad show and just fell in love with the products that that people were designing, because it was such an interesting process to take a problem you know, come up with creative solutions, test them with real people in the form of research and prototypes and that kind of thing, and to actually see these concepts of ideas that are solving problems in 3D. That was so fascinating to me. And so I applied for the program intending, I guess, fully to become an industrial designer. And then during my last year, as part of my thesis project, we started looking into this problem of noncompliance in cervical cancer and STI screening, and came up with a concept for at-home screening that would enable people to collect their own samples and then send it into a lab to test. And after that, after graduation, it was just sort of one of those ideas that you couldn't really put down because it was such a good idea. And I think on top of that, I sort of had this feeling that if I didn't do it or if I didn't try, I might regret it later on. And so it wasn't right away, but over time, my co-founder and I decided, you know what, let's just go for it and see what happens and give it a good shot. And so we started Eve Medical to try to commercialize this concept.
And were you always an entrepreneur? Did you have this entrepreneurial spirit within you?
I actually don't feel like there's such a thing as one kind of entrepreneur. I know that there's a stereotypical entrepreneur, which I am not, you know, the person who started a lemonade stand when they were seven. But I think that entrepreneurs are really just people who are trying to solve problems and want to have some impact in the world. And so I didn't grow up thinking that I was going to be an entrepreneur or that I was going to take that route. But I fell into this passion for helping people get screened. And so, you know, I think that me just pursuing that kind of automatically makes me an entrepreneur. And there's a whole lot of entrepreneurs that are very successful that, you know, that start out that way just because they care about what they're trying to solve.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And there's a question I usually ask at the very end of the podcast, which I won't ask today because you just alluded to it there, but it is, are we born entrepreneurs or do we learn to become entrepreneurs? And I think that what you have built and are building and what you are offering to women is one of those really great examples that when you have a compelling solution and you're on a mission, entrepreneurship is just one of the vehicles of resourcefulness that you use to be able to put your product out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So what is
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what is your product? Like, just so that people are like, okay, cool, this home screening. And I think women everywhere are like, sorry, I don't have to go to my doctor to be screened for cervical cancer and dysplasia on my cervix. Tell me more about that.
Sure. So I run a company called Eve Medical, and our product is called the Eve Kit Service. And what it is it's a way for women and people with vaginas to screen for infections like chlamydia, gonorrhea, and HPV without having to leave their home. So what we do is we want to empower women to take care of their sexual health in a comfortable, convenient way. By being able to collect their own samples at home, send it into a lab, get it processed, get the results online. And then if there is a positive result, then they talk to one of our doctors about that and get counseled and make sure that that's followed up with. So it's really just an alternative way that people can get screened without having to go into a clinic if that is a barrier for them. So we know that a lot of people have barriers like lack of time. Sometimes they don't get too far away. And sometimes it's honestly just or discomfort that stops them from getting screened. And we don't think that should be the case. And so we created the solution to try to make screening more accessible.
Okay. And so the thing that I really want to explore and unpack in that piece is I think there are a number of us who feel strongly that women have never really been treated really well by the medical system as it pertains to pertains to women's health. And it is often a surprise when I talk to physicians, I'm going to generalize here, male physicians, where they're like, what do you mean? Like, you just have to go and get it, just get it done. This is really important. And there's, and even sometimes female physicians who are like, just do it, just go in and get your pap done. Because it's so important to your health. And there really is this lack of appreciation to the fact that this is a deeply uncomfortable, vulnerable exam for a lot of women. And sure, we can totally suck it up. But what I love is that you've kind of approached this from this perspective. What if we could just do better? And I think that's really powerful. So I'm actually just really interested in, now you've got this beautiful design piece. So you're acknowledging an aesthetic, and we're going to link to your website so people can actually see, because not only is it, can you screen at home, you actually get this beautiful kit to be able to screen at home, which I really, really love that you're doing that. What I really want to understand is when you said to the world, okay, we've got this beautiful kit, we're acknowledging the fact that some women really don't want to go to a doctor's office to have their pap test completed or their cervical screening completed. And did the medical community just open you with welcome arms and say, thank you so much for finding a solution to a problem we've been desperately trying to fix? I projected so much there, and it was really fun, by the way.
Well, I mean, I think that first of all, you have to look at the stats. So in Canada, 30 to 40% of women are not screening on a regular basis for cervical cancer, even though a lot of them know that they should be. And, you know, for the most part, there isn't a cost to it. So it's not a solution that's working for everyone. And I think that's very clear through just looking at the statistics. And so I think with the medical community, who tend to be very, you know, scientifically oriented, you need to start there and say, look, you have to acknowledge that there is a gap here. There is an issue. There's been a lot of research around why people don't go. And there's been a lot of research as well around the fact that people collecting their own samples at home is a very promising alternative for those people. And in a lot of the research, women have stated that they would be more likely to participate in a screening program or to collect their, if they could collect their own samples. So I think that's where we need to start. In terms of actual adoption, I think that this is one of the challenges with healthcare, is that nothing really happens overnight. You could have people think that it's the greatest idea, but you still have to demonstrate it in a scientific way. So one of the things that we've really focused on is demonstrating our product through scientific research. So we've collaborated with researchers at McGill, at McMaster. We've done validation studies with labs in order to demonstrate that not only is this a pretty kit and a beautiful product, but it actually has scientific merit and it does what it's supposed to do. We're doing a project with Women's College Hospital and FE Health, as well as a couple community health centers to provide this screening method to underscreened women in immigrant and Aboriginal communities, to understand how they would want it delivered if it was delivered in primary care. And that kind of data that we collect will then be, you know, presented back to stakeholders within the healthcare system in order to get that conversation going and to progress it further. I hope that answers your question.
It 100% does. And I love that you're mentioning all of these pieces, Jessica, because I think one of the things that happens for passionate entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs who are really passionate about supporting women's health is that we're like, I have this really great idea and I totally understand how it could move the needle within our healthcare. And then we're super disappointed when you bring it to the table and the other stakeholders are like, great, demonstrate to us how this has efficacy. And when you're so passionate about it, you're like, listen, like, we just need to put it into place. You're going to see that it works. And the reality is that when you're putting a bunch of people at the table who are all coming from a variety of different paradigms, we need to find a common language. And when something is actually going to get And I'm not talking to you. I'm actually talking to our audience because people are like, I've got a good idea. If you're gonna get something adopted in a mass way, you do need to be able to think to how you can provide evidence of efficacy, because that's a language that all the stakeholders are going to want to understand, including political stakeholders who are like, I have to be able to prove to the public how this actually is going to affect the bottom line of care delivery. So I think the reason I'm reframing this is because I think we have incredible entrepreneurs in our community, and sometimes the access of your product or your idea to mass market really does require that we pull in and put some effort into providing evidence for its effectiveness. And if it's as effective as you're excited about, we're going to be able to start to do that. So I love that that's part of the lens through which you have viewed your own product.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that the passion is absolutely so critical, because people always talk about starting companies as being a marathon, not a sprint. And that is absolutely true. But in order to keep you going through that marathon, through all these hoops, open up all those conversations, you need to have the passion for it. And that's really what's going to allow you to state your case and to get these stakeholders on side, or at least to talk to you, because that passion absolutely will come across to other people.
Yeah. And let's talk about that passion a little bit, because I think one of the things that can be disheartening for entrepreneurs is you're super excited. You clearly understand how this product is going to be able to change the world. And then I know when you and I spoke a few years ago, I was like, when is this available? You're like, yeah, we're working through some loopholes and some things we have to do. And it is absolutely a marathon. What have been some of the things that you have been confronted and run up against as you've been trying to put this out into the real world? Because I want people to understand that this is not an idea I executed, and now we've got this big, beautiful business.
Well, I think that healthcare, it's a regulated industry. And so just to get up and running, there's a lot of requirements that entrepreneurs would have to look at. So first of all, your product needs to, as we already talked about, demonstrate some kind of efficacy and that it actually does what it's supposed to do. You would have to get Health Canada to license your product. The company itself needs to be ISO certified, which is a quality system for managing medical devices. And then on top of that, because we work with partners in the healthcare system, so that would be labs and physicians as well, we have to make sure that all of those partners are complying with their regulations as well. So it is quite a lot of pieces to juggle in order to get something like this up and running. And it does take time. One of the challenges is that it takes capital as well to get this all up and running. But having said that, again, going back to the passion, if you really believe in what you want to do and that you think it's going to make a difference, then I think it's important to stick with it and to keep going and not be disheartened if you spend another day dealing with regulatory stuff or something like that. It's all part of a bigger picture and a bigger mission.
Talk to us a little bit about the capital piece. Where did you guys find capital to get it up and running and then maintain that continuity till you had a product in the market?
Yeah, so initially we applied for every grant under the sun in order to get some initial capital to do small pieces. So, for example, we got funding to make our prototype, which we had out of OCAD, but it was non-functional, into a functional product, and we worked with a mechanical engineer to do that. And then we got a little bit more funding to do our first clinical study and to learn some things from that. And then we got some more funding to build our first tool, injection mold tool, so that we could have proper parts and figure out how to do that. And at some point, we hit this wall where we no longer could fund the pieces of development that we needed to quickly enough with just the grants that were available to us. So at that point, we went out to some angel investors, presented our story, talked about what capital we needed to get to the next stage. And so we were able to bring on board some investors at that point to fund the company. And pretty much that's how the company has been funded through the initial stages of it. And, you know, now that we're a little bit farther along, we're generating revenue that all goes back into the things that we have to do as well to grow the company.
And I'm assuming you completely learned how to do all of this at the business course offered at OCAT.
The one that didn't exist.
Right. Well, and I think that's part of it, right? Is as so many of us come through different schools and we're learning different skills and we get out into the real world. And I think especially in today's landscape, the notion of traditional employment is changing rapidly. And I think a lot of us are finding ourselves as entrepreneurs when we didn't necessarily expect it. Where did you guys get the advisement and the strategy and all of the different pieces that enabled you to know what next steps to take?
So there are, you know, I really think it takes a village to build a business. And we absolutely had amazing advisors and mentors who worked with us at various stages of the business to help advise what we needed to do next. Some of them, it really depended on what we needed to do. So some of them were key opinion leaders that I approached at conferences because I thought that they could help from the scientific side. Some of them were people who were really experienced on the business side. I want to caution you, though, that it is possible to have an overload of advice. So it's really important to go out and seek the advice, but you as the entrepreneur know your business the best, your space the best. Even though you don't know everything, you are the one with all the info. What often happens is when you talk to too many people, you start getting conflicting pieces of advice. And so, which is okay, that's fine. But ultimately, the decision lies with you and you have to figure out what to do next. I also think it's really important to be okay with making mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. It's impossible to build a business without making mistakes. And you have to give yourself room to make those mistakes, both, you know, in your business, but also emotionally. You can't be too hard on yourself when that happens.
Thank you so much for saying that, because I talk about this a lot, that one of the prerequisites for being a successful entrepreneur is the abandonment of one's need for perfection. Mm-hmm. And really moving into a space of creativity and willing to try. And I love hearing that message reiterated. What's one of the biggest mistakes, or let's call it learning opportunities, or let's just flat out call it a failure that you guys have had as you've moved through your evolution, that was a real learning opportunity for you?
So an example of this is early on in the development of the product. We had developed an applicator, so the handle of our product that would turn and then a swab would come out to collect a sample. And we had the opportunity to design that swab, but we decided because an off-the-shelf component would have more clinical data behind it, to just purchase an off-the-shelf swab and combine it with our applicator in order to create the collection device product. So that was something that we thought was a good idea. But as we started working with it more, we kind of went down this path of creating the tool around this product, which if you've ever had any experience with manufacturing, is actually quite hard to change and very expensive to change. And, you know, thought this was great. And then we started our first study and realized that these swabs were starting to break. And we didn't really know why. And so we started doing some testing, and what we found was we basically just couldn't control how these swabs were being manufactured and at what point they would break, how brittle they were. We tried to work with the manufacturer, but they, this was such a small project for them. They didn't really want to change their whole manufacturing process. And so at that point, because we were so small, and because we were still so early on, I really think that this was a point at which, had I not been as, I guess, tenacious, I might have just packed it up and said, you know what, this was a failure, let's go home and just forget about the rest of it. But we persisted and we kept going. And so we ended up redesigning our own swab. We had to redirect some of the funding that we had received in order to do that, and, you know, take a bunch of time to start the whole manufacturing process again with a new tool. But in the at the end of the day, we had a better swab that was easier to use and would not, you know, break. It had the functionality that we wanted, and we can control the manufacturing. So at the end of the day, we ended up with a better product, and that's what we have today. And so I think this is just a small example of where we could have easily been disheartened and just stopped because it was so early, but we kept going and we were able to continue and grow the business from there.
So Jessica, tell us what is actually available on the market right now.
Yeah, so the Eve Kit service, which is the kits that we were talking about, they are available now. You can go to evekit.com. You can order a kit online. Currently, we have kits for HPV, which is a virus that causes cervical cancer. And we actually just launched a new kit for chlamydia and gonorrhea as well. So now that's something that people can screen for as well.
I love this. As you're saying this, like, I can't even tell you how happy I am because as a clinician, I have women sitting in my office and they're like, for a variety of reasons, sometimes it's trauma, sometimes it's just level of comfort. It doesn't even matter what the reason is. They're like, I know I should be screened for these things. I can't do it. I can't go in and do it. They don't want me to do it. They don't want another physician to do it. They're like, I'm electing for me to not have this done. And I love that this solution is such a great great thing for women who are in that situation and a variety of different situations. It's such a respectful way of being able to address something that is common to all of us as women. So congratulations on that piece.
Thanks. I really appreciate that.
Well, and you had talked a little bit before about the fact that it takes a village to raise a business. It also takes a village to raise children when you are also raising a business. Not to completely shift gears, but I think one of the things that you provide a tremendously unique insight on is what it's actually like to be a female founder and what it's like to be a female founder in an early stage company and also have an early stage real life baby. how has that journey been? Because I know you have an 8-month-old and this business. And how have you found some balance between the two of those? What's caught you by surprise?
I feel like I prepared as much as I could before the baby came along. I think one of the things that we did while I was still pregnant was move the office closer to my home, so that I would be able to jump back and forth between the two without having to travel too much. I think that's a luxury that I had as a small business to be able to do that. I think we as a team prepared really well. We had a lot of plans around when I was going to come back. Those plans were a little bit flexible depending on, you know, how things go, because you never really know how a baby is going to turn out if there's, you know, extra time that you need. But we had sort of a plan in place for how much time I was going to take off, what people were going to be responsible for in the meantime, how they could get in touch with me if they needed to. And so I think those were things that we did as much as possible to prepare. When the baby came along, we pretty much stuck to the plan, actually. And I think we were very lucky in that our baby is, for the most part, a pretty relatively easy baby. I mean, no baby is easy at the beginning, just because of the lack of sleep and the need to feed all the time. But I think over time, we were able to get to a position where I could work part-time initially, start putting my feet back into the business waters and then slowly transition back to full time. And during this time, I mean, it takes a village to raise a business, but it also takes a village to raise a baby. You know, I was very lucky to have a lot of support from my family. My parents moved in with us to help take care of the baby. And then once they left, we were able to find additional help to take care of the baby during the day while I worked. And then, you know, we would switch over after work. And yeah, I think we've kind of gotten into a good groove now. I didn't have a lot of free time before, but I think I have even less free time now. And so, yeah, it does make you more efficient at trying to get the things done that you need to get done, because you know that you're not going to have extra time later to catch up and do those things.
Yeah, I actually say that my kids are the ultimate productivity hack for me, because there's just no dilly-dallying, right? Like there's no, yeah, exactly. There's no, I'm going to check Facebook for 10 minutes and then I'm going to start my work. Like that 10 minutes is crucial. So I think once you get into that groove state, it makes a big difference. Did you have any, and sometimes it's all in our, sometimes it's in our head and sometimes it's real, but did you have any communication that you had to navigate with respect to investors and having a baby? Was that a thing for you?
Yes. I thought long and hard about how to communicate this to my investors without worrying them. But at the end of the day, it was actually something in my own head. So what happened was I sent out an email, I communicated to them about the business and updates around what we were doing, what we were planning. And as part of that update, I mentioned that I was expecting that we as a team had come up with a plan to cover the time that I was away. And really, no one seemed to have a problem. I mean, it seemed like I was the one who had the biggest problem of all. Mm-hmm. And it was really supportive. And so I was really pleasantly surprised by the support I received on a personal level with the investors that had come on board to help us.
I think sometimes too, it's a testament of the type of people who are attracted to the character of a business that make that often easier to navigate. And your company is about supporting women. So, you know what, I feel like it's one of those things, and I had a similar experience where in hindsight, you're like, oh, of course they were going to be supportive. But I agree with you. And I think this is a mindset and a hoop to jump through that is unique to us as female founders. And I think it's important for us all to just talk about it, address it, look at the language that we use, and then also just reorient our own mindsets around it. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for you that you have found, that you have started to really find your groove.
Yeah, thanks. Me too.
What's been the biggest pleasant surprise in this entire journey?
I really think that hearing women's stories is one of the things that I love most and drives me the most as well. Just because it helps to, for me personally, to feel like what we're doing is making a difference for people. It's solving a real problem, but it's also an opportunity to connect with people about a topic that is really sensitive and really intimate for them. And so sometimes those stories can be things like, yeah, I had a bad screening experience and this is something that's really helpful. And sometimes those stories are, I knew someone who had cervical cancer, and this was a really big thing in their life and in my life as well. And sometimes those stories are around how the product has made things easier. I love getting those. I hope that we'll continue to get them, and they are definitely drivers for us, not just me, but for my entire team.
Amazing. I really love what you guys are putting out into the world. It is actually changing the landscape of women's health. Hey, fellow go-getters. So we've got a lot going on right now over at Anthropology Performance Labs, and I want to make sure that you guys are in the loop. We have groups and contests and quizzes and meal plans and all sorts of things that you can get your hands on. And the best place for you to be in the know is actually to ensure that you are following and hanging out and engaging over on the gram. My personal handle, which is at Dr., that is Dr. Megan Walker, is where most of this activity is currently taking place. And so I'm going to invite all of you to come on over and to follow and to play along. This way you can engage with our weekly guests, get direct links to some of the things that they're talking about in our show notes, and have access to some of the coolest new quizzes, ideas, and games and links that we have in the pipeline over at Anthropology. Head on over to Instagram, hit follow, and let's keep in touch. My handle over there is at Dr. Megan Walker, and let's keep the conversation happening. And I think this is a really good place on that super positive note for us to just transition to the back half of the interview. And I call this section our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe that we have them in our lives as well. And I'm always curious how entrepreneurs live their own lives so that they and the types of habits and things that exist that enable you to actually power through your day and remain true to your brand. So if you'll indulge me, I've got a few quick rapid fire questions for you.
Okay.
None of them are hard.
Okay.
First question for you, Jessica. Who is inspiring you right now?
Oh, so one of my heroes is Margaret Crane. I had the opportunity to meet her a little while ago, and I have to say she is just one of the most inspiring women in my life. And for people who don't know who Margaret Crane is, she is the inventor of the pregnancy test. So she was also a designer, and back in the 60s, her employers came up with this idea of a rapid test for pregnancy, and she was the one who looked at it and said, this is what women want to do by themselves at home. And it took her 16 years of trying to convince people and being really, really persistent to finally get it out on the market. And, you know, look where it is today. People take pregnancy tests at home without even thinking about it, because that's just how it's done. And so she is definitely one of my heroes.
What a great story. I love that. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Brushing my teeth.
Yeah, that's a great one. I haven't had that one before, except once we had a dentist, and I'm pretty sure their answer was something really similar. Yeah, brushing your teeth is absolutely critical to one's long-term health. It's awesome. Do you floss at the same time?
Sometimes.
Okay, great. So let's just up the ante on your teeth brushing in terms of building up that preventative health piece. Jessica, what do you do for fun or play?
I love board games. I haven't played them as much since my son was born, but I love sitting down with a good board game, you know, just banging out a couple hours of sometimes it's strategy games, sometimes it's just a fun card game, but I love being able to spend that time with someone in my life that I care about and I think is really fun, and I really look forward to being able to do that with my son when he gets older.
What's your favorite strategy game?
Oh my God, I'm blanking on.
I'm like a huge Settlers of Catan fan, and always looking for new strategy games.
Okay, it's a huge box, and there's like 200 pieces in it, and there are like an infinite number of variations of rooms that you can create in this. And my husband bought it, and he was so excited the day he got it. It's blanking on me, but if anyone on the podcast knows what I'm talking about,
then drop the name of the game on our Instagram where we are
promoting. It's a giant box.
Okay, you guys, it's a giant box with lots of pieces. The first person who can name that game gets an HPV screen. No, I don't. I'm just saying. No one's ever been dangled an HPV screen before as the grand prize. What's your favorite color?
My favorite color I'm gonna have to say some kind of light blue.
It's amazing how often entrepreneurs answer blue.
Blue?
Something on the
blue?
yeah. This is
blue sky, I guess.
This is like my favorite question to ask right now. Yeah, blue sky, I love it. What is your audacious goal for the next year, personally, with your business? What's the big thing that you're moving towards?
We want to launch another product. One of the things that, you know what? I'm not going to talk about it, but there is another product in the background that we are working on that I'm excited about.
I love that. And that's the cool thing about once you have a platform and you have a process and you need to go through, you can have some really cool ideas. And what it does is it leaves us all hanging. We're going to watch what Eve Medical is up to and what you are up to personally, Jessica, because you're doing really great things in the world. If people do want to learn more about your company and watch for some of the cool upcoming things that you guys are going to bring to market in the next few years, where can they go to watch what you're up to?
So you can follow us on social media on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and our handle is at Hello Eve Kit. You can also go to our website at evekit.com. We update with blog posts and things like that to keep people updated. We just did a fun blog post on our team talking to their mothers about sexual health and what it was like back in the day. And then one of the other things that you can do if you're someone who doesn't need to screen, but you want to support other people getting screened is you can actually contribute or donate kits to other people within our community who need screening. We do have partners that distribute our kits for us to underscreen people. And then we also have, which is relatively new, some fun merchandise available as well. So you can get a vagina shirt, a vagina tote, a vagina beanbag, and various other vagina related things.
I'm all over that. All right. I'm going to log on today and buy my vagina paraphernalia. Jessica, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate the work that you are putting out into the world. And we're going to make sure everyone knows about it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.